This is Digital Story Podcast number 717, December 10th, 2019. Today's theme is, it's time to stop worrying about the photo industry. I'm Derek Story. Those who really care about the art of photography and its future have been inundated with doom and gloom in 2019. Rumors about brands going out of business, how smartphones have destroyed our culture, and the lack of innovation that's to blame for our problems. Today, I'm going to look at some of the changes we've seen in 2019 and try to put this whole thing into perspective. I hope you enjoy the show. I remember once someone told me, and I don't even remember who this person was, but I still remember the phrase, which is, there will always be something to worry about, right? There will always be something to worry about. And my gosh, have we had our share of it in the photo industry lately, haven't we? There's all sorts of stuff going on. And, you know, some of it has definitely been good. I'm going to be talking about some of the things in 2019 that I think are really interesting and that I've enjoyed learning about and covering. But there's also a lot of noise, and I'm going to address the noise a little bit later in this segment. And I'm going to start out by taking a look at, okay, what's going on right now? What's interesting? And what kind of impact is it having on things? I want to start out with AI image editing. Now, this is something that hasn't grabbed the really big headlines like some other topics have that we'll be discussing here. But I think it's noteworthy and it's definitely marching forward. And what is AI image editing? Well, just look at Luminar 4 and you'll see what it is, which is, for instance, you have a slider and let's just say it's AI image enhancement, right? And you just move the slider and all sorts of different things happen to your picture at once, you know, based on the algorithms that are developed, you know, for that particular task. And Luminar, for example, released by Skylum, has gotten into, you know, AI structure enhancement, where, for instance, if you have a person standing against a brick wall, you move the slider, the brick wall will increase in texture, but the person will be left alone. AI sky enhancement, where you have a landscape, you have a sky, you have foreground, you have all that stuff. You move the slider, the sky gets enhanced, but the foreground and the landscape, you know, remain untouched. This is the kind of thing that I'm talking about. We see it for portraits and all sorts of stuff. And it has become far more prevalent in 2019. We're seeing a lot more of it, and I think we're going to continue to see more of it as we march into 2020. Now, it's interesting to me because it's kind of appealing at first. I mean, when I first started playing with Luminar and some of the AI tools in it, it made me think of eating raw cookie dough. And I don't know if any of you have ever eaten raw cookie dough. I suspect that many of you have. If you have, you will know exactly what I'm talking about. When you have your first bite of raw cookie dough, oh, it tastes so good. You know, you're making the little balls and you're putting them on the greased pan, you know, getting them ready for the oven. The oven's preheating, but you can't resist. You have to have just a little bit of cookie dough while you're preparing the pan. And you have a bite and it tastes really good. So maybe you have another bite when whoever you're working with isn't looking. And then about that third or fourth bite, you start to feel a little nauseous, right? You start to feel a little sick. Cookie dough definitely has its limits. And it's just like a little bit you can get away with and it's really good. And then suddenly you're just not feeling well at all. And AI image editing for me is a little bit like raw cookie dough, because at first, when I first playing with it, I go, you know, that's really nice. And that has saved me a lot of time. But the more and more I work with it and the more that I look at the works produced by other people with it, And then I start to go, this, I mean, we have just lost all sense of reality here when I look at these images. I'm not saying that it's bad at all. Just like I'm not saying that cookie dough is bad, right? Cookie dough is cookie dough, right? It's one of the most wonderful things in life, especially when it's baked properly and made into excellent cookies. And I think our images are a lot like that. You know, they're really great when they're baked properly and made into beautiful photographs. AI may or may not be part of it. It has been a big thing in 2019. Going forward, I'm sure it's still going to be around. The actual impact that it has on photography for people like us, for you and me, I'm not sure yet. I think it's going to be somewhat of a convenience in certain situations, but it's not going to be the bread and butter of our work. At least that's my prediction. Another big thing in 2019, and we talked a bit about it last week, of course, was mirrorless cameras going full frame. And this has been interesting for me because I have been part of mirrorless photography from the very, very beginning, from the ground floor. So I have seen it come to life mainly, you know, through the products of Olympus and Panasonic. And then, of course, you know, broadened as other manufacturers came into the fold and embraced and looked at their stuff too. And that the full frame thing is definitely an interesting turn. And again, I like it. I think it's interesting. Now, I haven't personally bought a full frame mirrorless camera, and I probably won't. I have a couple full frame DSLRs that work just fine for when I need them. And for me, and maybe it's just because I was part of mirrorless, you know, back when it first came to being, but for me, mirrorless is something that's smaller, more compact, more nimble. The lenses are smaller, all that kind of stuff. That being said, however, just because full frame mirrorless isn't my particular cup of tea, it has brought a little energy to the photography industry. It has given us something new to talk about. My concern with it, and I do have a concern with it, is that, you know, Canon and Nikon and Panasonic and Sigma has spent a tremendous amount of money over the last couple of years developing their full frame product line. And maybe some of that money could be spent developing other things other than just all of them whacking each other with full frame sensors over the head. And it's going to be interesting to see how some of this plays out in 2020 and 2021. And especially in terms of, you know, relative to Sony and what they're doing. Now, at the same time this year, smartphones continued to get smarter. You look at the Google Pixel 4, you look at the iPhone 11, and, you know, these things are just brilliant. They really are just brilliant. And again, they're not the devil if, you know, you're a photography aficionado, right? All they have really done is they've knocked out, you know, the whole bottom part of the sector. In other words, we're not going to see any digital point shoots anymore unless they're high end, unless they're, you know, specialized and have really fast lens or something like that. So, you know, they've definitely dominated, you know, the bottom sector of the market. Professionals use them, but they don't use them exclusively, but they augment their work with them. And, you know, and they're just like these great new tools that we have that are a lot of fun. You always have them in your pocket. We get to take more pictures. And quite honestly, you know, getting down on smartphones or blaming smartphones for the end of the world really isn't fair. If you just stop for a minute and appreciate what these companies have done with these devices, it's really impressive. And they're just going to keep going. Right? It is just going to keep going. I'm already looking forward to seeing what Apple and Google announce next year. I'm sure it's going to be great, and I'm sure it's going to be an evolution over, you know, what's available right now. All of that being said, I'm still shooting with an iPhone 10. Again, I'm feeling a little bit like a dinosaur on this show because I have this gear that's a couple years old and I'm not state of the art. And, you know, when I first started doing this show and when I first left O'Reilly back 10 years ago, I really felt the need to always be talking about the most current thing. And I think maybe things were changing faster then, and it was more important then than it is now. But just like with our interchangeable lens cameras, that, you know, a good camera from 3 years ago is a good camera today. Same thing goes with the smartphones. You know, an iPhone 10 from a couple years ago is still a very good camera. And it might not do everything that an iPhone 11 can do, but I look at the pictures that show up on my screen and I'm pretty darn impressed. And I have a lot of fun with it. And, you know, who knows, next year, depending on what happens with the iPhones, if 5G does get traction, if the 5G devices are affordable and the battery drain isn't too horrible and all that, you know, I might look then at, you know, upgrading my 10. But there just isn't that pressing need like there was a while back to, you know, always have the latest thing. It's just not necessary anymore. Now, another theme in 2019, and again, this one was a bit under the radar in the way that AI image editing has been a bit under the radar, which is film photography and the resurgence of analog photography. It's really been overstated. It really has. I mean, there is clearly there's some traction there, and it's kind of cool to see film companies release a film that they had discontinued, and now they're bringing back a new version of it. You know, Kodak and Fujifilm, they're both doing that. Kodak with Ektachrome, Fujifilm with Neopan, stuff like that. I'm enjoying it personally, but I also know that I am part of a niche group that enjoys analog photography. And, you know, this is not a widespread thing. This is not something that's going to combat smartphones and, you know, their domination in the industry. But I do think film photography has one important thing in 2019, which it shows that something as old as film photography, something that really has been replaced now for almost 20 years by digital technology, not quite 20 years, you know, in terms of widespread use, but 20 years in terms of availability, and it's still hanging in there. I mean, it's still around. On one level, that gives me a certain amount of hope in terms of DSLRs, digital DSLRs, in terms of interchangeable lens cameras in general, as we see their sales decline compared to smartphones. It gives me hope that these things that we value and like now will still be here at some level or another a decade from now, right? It's not like they're going away. Because I'll tell you, if a Pentax K1000 still is popular on eBay and in my film camera shop and all that, all this time later, right? After everything that's happened in the photography industry, then certainly, a lot of the technology that we're using right now is going to remain viable as well. So that's been the thing for me about film photography, that it's the thing that gives me hope for the future, in that there are still so many people who love it and embrace it. And the cameras are still around and they're still cool. And even though it's a niche product now, it's a glimmer of hope as we look toward the future with the tools that we're using at the moment. So where do we go from here? You know, how do we take the stuff that I'm talking about? How do we process it? And what do we think about? In all honesty, what I think is that we should just keep doing what we're doing and let the marketplace figure it out. You know, there will always be plenty of cameras and lenses for those of us who enjoy serious photography. And what's going on with the marketplace is really not our problem. Honestly, it isn't. I know that you could, you know, by extension going, well, if Olympus really begins to suffer, then, you know, they might stop making cameras and, lenses and so forth. And then, I won't be able to continue to enjoy the tools that I like. Well, yeah, but Panasonic is part of it too. And there are third parties and something's going to happen. If there's truly a need, the marketplace will fill it. Honestly, it will. it's just really not our problem what happens in the marketplace. And I think we have to be leery of being sucked into that thinking that we do have to worry about it. Part of the problem is websites and podcasts, you know, they're hungry for news to report. Just like we're seeing the same thing on the political front with the 24-hour news cycle. And we're getting reports about all sorts of stuff that, you know, really isn't worth our time to listen to or digest. And just because websites are reporting this or that about the photography industry, it doesn't mean that we have to be distracted by it. Let me give you an example. Let's take the rumor that Olympus was going to close its imaging division. I don't think that should have been reported. I don't think that should have been a news item. To me, a news item would have been if Olympus was taking steps to close their imaging division, if they were starting layoffs, if they had released information in terms of that they're going to start winding down. If there was something concrete to report, that's one thing. That is news, okay? That is news. Who really cares if Nikon is number two or number three? What's important are the products that they're creating. And I think they're going to continue to make great products, regardless if they're number two, number three, or number four. I mean, look at where Leica is, you know, in the ranking of things, and they're continuing to innovate and create interesting products, even though they sell a fewer number of them compared to Nikon and Canon and Sony. Those sort of things really don't matter, and I'm not sure that we really should care very much. Companies like Skylum, if they want to place all their bets on AI imaging, that's great, all right? You know, if you want to be total AI image editor and you don't want to have a library that's functional and that's your choice that you make as a company, that's great. If their product doesn't meet my needs, then I don't have to buy it, and I certainly don't have to worry, you know, about, you know, what's going on with them or what's going on with Topaz or On One or any of that. You know, it's all really about perspective. It's just that we're so inundated with meaningless information that we sometimes forget that it doesn't have to affect our lives, and it probably won't affect our lives. So as we approach 2020, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to enjoy the new products that are released. And there's probably going to be some great stuff coming out this coming year. I'm going to learn as many new techniques as possible. I want to be a better artist. I want to be a better photographer. And I want to be able to make my images look even better than I did this last year. And if it involves a little AI, that's great. And if it doesn't, you know, that's fine too. Whatever works for me, that's what I'm going to embrace. But what I'm not going to do in 2020 is worry about the photography industry. Because trust me, it will be just fine. Skillshare for photographers. Skillshare is an online learning community with thousands of classes for creators, entrepreneurs, and curious people everywhere. You can take courses in photography, videography, audio production, you name it, they've got it. So whether you're picking up a new skill for your day job or figuring out your next side project or pursuing a longtime passion, Skillshare has classes for you. And indeed they do. They have a lot of stuff there. The photography courses are amazing. And the one that I'm recommending this week is Portrait Photography on the Street, Connecting with Strangers by Zun Lee, who explores Harlem in New York City and shares his secrets for capturing the essence of a place and its people. His techniques for getting your best shot make this a perfect quick class to inspire both the novice photographer and the expert to get out and shoot. And this is just one of the many top-notch titles on Skillshare. But with our street photography experience coming up in LA in March, I'm going to come back to this one, and they have another street photography title in there I want to look at. And because I can tell that I'm going to learn some new things from it. And I want to go into this shoot that we're going to do in Los Angeles in March with you know, some new techniques, some new ideas, and some new approaches, because it's such a great opportunity for that. And this is where Skillshare can, you know, really help me up my game. You can join millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for TDS listeners. Get 2 months free. That's right. Skillshare is offering the digital story community 2 months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. To sign up, just go to Skillshare.com/TDS. That's Skillshare.com/TDS. 2 months for free. And a big thanks to Skillshare for sponsoring the show. Again, that's Skillshare.com/TDS. Why I prefer Micro Four Thirds cameras for product photography. So this is a piece that I posted a few days ago in the Digital Story. And it's funny how it came about, because I was really jamming on product photography for the film camera shop. It's been a busy season, which has been fantastic. And, you know, the way my workflow goes for the film camera shop is that, you know, first I take the cameras and I refurbish them. I get them working nicely. I get them all clean looking. You know, it's a lot of fun, that part of it. Once I have them ready to go, I photograph each camera, because what I want to be able to say in the listing is, you know, the camera that you see in the pictures is the one that you're going to get. So if I'm selling a Nikon FG, I've sold dozens of Nikon FGs, but you know, I want to show you the one that you're going to buy, not just a Nikon FG, that kind of thing. So I do original pictures for all the cameras that are in the shop. And that takes some time, but because time is money, I want to be as efficient as possible. This is where it dawned on me how valuable Micro Four Thirds photography is, because, you know, I think back to when I was an apprentice, which has been a while now. And the guy who I apprenticed for, he was a great commercial photographer. I really liked working with him, and he taught me a lot. He graduated from Brooks. He taught me a lot about, you know, lighting for products, taught me a lot about, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I remember how much time we used to spend setting up a product shoot and, you know, getting the lighting right and, you know, the backdrop and, you know, the focus and all that sort of thing. And of course, the camera is always on a tripod, right? Because you needed as much depth of field as possible, you know, so that everything in the product was in focus, all that kind of stuff. And then I think about now using Micro Four Thirds for my product photography, how much easier it is. First of all, I don't have to use a tripod anymore, because I have that little extra depth of field with the smaller chip, right? With a Micro Four Thirds chip compared to a full frame chip or a medium format chip. So a little extra depth of field allows me to shoot most of the time for my product shots. I'm shooting at f4.5, you know, f4, f4.5, somewhere right in there. And if I pay attention to my angles, I have plenty of depth of field. And even though I'm just using LED lights, I can still hand hold. I can still shoot at ISO 1600. I don't have to go any higher than that. ISO 1600 on cameras these days is a piece of cake. And I can just work really fast. It's amazing. It's amazing how easy it is compared to, you know, what we used to have to do. Then having, you know, the articulated LCD, it makes it easy for me to get all these different angles while I'm shooting, so I can work really fast. The image stabilization is fantastic. You know, it just goes on and on and on. And then if all of that wasn't good enough, then having the real-time feedback on exposure compensation, because I'm usually shooting against a white background, right? So if you're shooting a black camera on a white background, that's different than shooting a silver camera on a white background. And just by having real-time feedback on exposure compensation, that saves me time. And it's funny how I have really fallen in love with using Micro Four Thirds cameras for my product shots. The product shots look great. I mean, you can go over to the Film Camera Shop. There's a link on all the pages of the Digital Story for the Film Camera Shop. It's up in the top nav bar. It says Camera Shop, and then it's also, there's an ad tile on it. And you can take a look at those shots. And the frosting on the cake is that most of those shots that you're looking at, those are right out of the camera. because, you know, what you see is what you get, and I can do the exposure compensation. I have enough depth of field, and because I have this nice sharp Leica lens for my Micro Four Thirds camera, basically I could just, the images go out of the camera and they go onto the catalog page. That is important when you're doing what I'm doing, when you're trying to be efficient. So it's funny, you know, we talk a lot about mirrorless photography, and especially Micro Four Thirds photography, as being great for travel and nimble photography and all of that. And it's so true. It is fantastic for that. But I've also discovered, and it's funny, I never talked about it before, that Micro Four Thirds photography, in my case anyway, is also very good for business. I have just a little bit of a virtual camera club news here. You know, one thing I want to bring up before I forget is that I just had a new title come out on both LinkedIn Learning and on lynda.com, and it's, you know, Photos for Mac OS Catalina and iPad OS. I'm pretty jazzed about this title. One of the reasons why is because what happened with iPad OS, where they really improved Photos because of iPad OS, and that not only do you have a similar experience on the iPad that you have on your computer, on your Mac. And by the way, if you haven't looked at Photos for a while, then, you know, there's a lot of good stuff going on there. But in some ways, it's even better on the iPad than it is on the Mac. And one area that we get on the iPad now is that you can do video editing in Photos. And I'm not just talking about cropping, which is, you know, great unto itself, or trimming, which is, you know, very useful, but I'm talking about color adjustment and stuff like that. You can edit your videos in Photos and do all this great stuff on the iPad. And so when I was putting this title together, what I did was, is, you know, I showed you the things that are best for each platform, thinking that, you know, it's all connected with iCloud anyway. So if you work on something on the iPad, then it's available on the Mac. If you work on something on the Mac, it's available on the iPad, and you can really use the right tool for the job. That is out right now. There's a link in the show notes. But Photos for Mac OS Catalina and for iPad OS, it's available on LinkedIn Learning and lynda.com. Our street photography experience is taking shape, and it's coming up on March 13th through the 15th. We have a great crew that's going to be joining us. And of course, we have the best co-instructor in the world in Mike Baining. And I'm going to have some new techniques too, right? As I was talking about earlier. If you want to join us, just go to thenimblephotographer.com, go to workshops, and you can put just a $100 deposit down, and that will hold your spot. Then I'll follow up with you and get you all squared away. This is going to be a really fun event. If you want to come down to Southern California and really see a whole different environment, probably different than anything that you've done in terms of urban photography, I encourage you to join us. We're going to have a really terrific event, March 13 through 15. A huge thanks to our Inner Circle members, the folks that support this podcast and really everything that we do in our virtual camera club. They have their own site. It's the Patreon site. You can get to it by clicking on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. That's where the folks who make this podcast a reality are hanging out. If you want to join them, if you want to become part of that elite group, then all you have to do is just click on that Patreon tile, go over and take a look and see what's going on, and hopefully you will become a part of it. And to our Patreon members right now, a big thanks to you. You guys and gals have been a very bright spot in my 2019. I want to mention that we have some affiliate links in the show notes. The links to those products in the podcast often contain affiliate code that credits the Digital Story for any purchases made from B&H or from Amazon via the click-through. Depending on the purchase, we may receive some financial compensation. There's no extra cost to you, and I encourage you to use those links because they help support the show. And finally, a huge thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. It's the place to go for all your printing needs. I am lining up right now. I'm working on, you know, my big print session coming up for the holidays. I'm going to be doing some fine art greeting cards. Another tradition that I've started, I just started it, I think, last year. So it's not quite a tradition yet. I'm making it a tradition. Is that I do at least one or two photos of family members, and I print them out as 5x7, and then everyone in the family gets one. My vision is that after 3, 4, 5 years, then suddenly we start to have this little collection of really nice family moments that are captured in these images that everyone has, and that you can put them on the wall, you can put them in a scrapbook, whatever you want. And I think by making prints of these, of the key players in the family, and sharing them with everyone else in the family, can help kind of keep the historical story going. All of this is printed on Red River paper, and a big thanks to them for not only sponsoring this podcast, to make projects like this a reality. I really appreciate them. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. You know, the bottom line is, don't worry, be happy, keep taking pictures. Come back and join me next week. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.